You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, November 14th, 2016. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Monday, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Democratic house cleaning, confronting clown fascism in the age of Trump, Donald Trump appointing Reince Priebus as chief of staff, Reince Priebus, whatever. I guess I will still have that impression to do. And Steve Bannon, pretty much a straight-up Klansman as chief strategist, even as President Obama has offered to give Donald Trump tutorials on how to do the job. President Obama also probably is going to approve that pipeline in Dakota, and why he should and must and needs to appoint Merrick Garland in a recess. The Globe responds. Chinese premier saying that the United States and China need to work together. Angela Merkel is skeptical. And Silvio Berlusconi says the comparisons between him and Trump are obvious, which is true. And it's a tremendous point. And by the way, not only is it a tremendous point, it's also a great point. Democrats looking to clean house of the last odor and remnants of the massive, unparalleled, gargantuan, relentless failure of Clintonism, even as it's floated to the press that Chelsea Clinton, who has worked at hedge funds and her parents' foundation, is eyeing a run for Congress. Exactly the type of populist, strategic, bottom-up revolt that we need. Please, please, please take your money and go away. I would just like to say Hillary Clinton, not talking about any corruption nonsense, but spending a couple years before you run for president collecting checks from Goldman and other banks, well, it's called cashing out for a reason. It's because you go out. There isn't a cashing in option. And the mixed message of the election, it was about racism, misogyny, and white supremacy, and economic insecurity. The numbers prove it, and there's no contradiction in addressing both of those crises. All of that and more with the great Waz, Wozni Lambre, my dear friend, co-host ESPN True Hoop, crew on Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. Real quick up front, technical mayhem. We are already getting affected by the clown fascist brown shirts. Clearly some Alex Jones operatives have been in our studios. I don't know all the issues going on. We are not YouTube live streaming right now. Waz is in studio. And first there was a problem getting a camera on Waz. And then I was like, sorry. Obviously happy to have Waz here, but in some ways not having him on camera defeats the purpose. I apologize. But we need to get started, and Waz was cool about it and chill, tranquilo. That's my Narcos influence. I say tranquilo all the time now. Tranquilo, tranquilo. I just tell Matt tranquilo after the election. And then the camera went on me, and it wasn't working either. There's a problem with the sound connection, so we're really sorry about that. The stream might go up during the show. Yep, we're up now?
Yeah, we're close. We're close. Approaching it, man.
We're approaching it. This is just another great reason that you should contribute money or become a member of the Majority Report, because we are simultaneously at the front lines of resistance against the complete destruction of our country and potentially the end of viability of life on planet Earth, and our cameras don't work. So help us out. Can we play some sound, Matt, or are you guys too? All right, I'm going to read, get to our first sponsor of the day, because look, in times like these, you need to stay hydrated. In fact, you should drink 8 glasses of water a day. Do you know about this, Waz? You're a sports dude. You're a fitness guy. Yes. Yes. He's looking all wary. He's like,
I was thinking about
sports and fitness. Wait. Oh, he's pushed the tuck. Wrong. Waz, 8 waters a day. You're a health-oriented guy. Besides the excessive drinking and smoking.
No, the reason why I hesitated when you posed the question, I said, am I a sports and fitness guy?
Dude, I'm trying to, amp you up for the read, dude.
And I do drink a lot of water.
All right, I drink a lot of water, too. It's what gets me through my yoga. It's the one thing, it's the one part of my persona on this show that is based in some reality that has been constructed around me. Very little wine, but lots of yoga. You should drink 8 glasses of water a day, but who really does? Coffee, soda, energy drinks. Why don't you just drink more water? Because it's bland and you want something that tastes good. Here's the solution. It's boring. You're boring. Here's the solution. Drink Hint Water instead. Hint Water was created by Kara Golden. A few years ago, after having her fourth child, she was overweight, had terrible acne, and felt overall awful. She was drinking 10 diet sodas a day instead of water, Matt. Hint.
Diet's gross.
Because water is boring. You're boring. But what other options are there? Juice is full of calories, and non-calorie drinks are garbage. I love that. I love that there's garbage in this copy because I say that all the time. I'm always calling people and things garbage, so it's pleasant to have it in my copy. That's why she started Hint Water. Hint is pure water infused with the taste of fresh fruit. With Hint, drinking water isn't boring. It's not boring. They have flavors to suit any palate. Watermelon, peach, mango, grapefruit, and so many more. No sugar, no chemicals, just great tasting, all natural, fruit-flavored water. We've already completely gone through the case that was sent to us in the office. Both Health and Self magazine have named Hint the water, the best-flavored water, and they know how important drinking water is to your health. Plus, you don't have to carry heavy cases on your back from the store. You just have it delivered right to your doorstep. And right now, you can get a single variety pack shipped directly to your door, including 3 bottles of Hint's most popular flavors, pineapple, watermelon, crisp apple, and blackberry. Normally $24, it's only $15 at drinkhint.com/majority. That's drinkhint.com/majority. drinkhint.com/majority. And keeping hydrated helps you have great-looking skin. It's true, and it's a fantastic point, and it's a true point. It's also a tremendous point. And when you have good-looking, healthy skin, you might be inspired to have a shave. I'm in beard mode because I'm in mourning because the country's about to end. But I'm getting ready. I'm getting back because you got to be, as they say in Jamaica, fit for to fight. So I'll shave soon. And when I shave, I will shave with my Harry's razor. And what I love most about Harry's is the closeness and the smooth, comfortable glide of the shave. Can we take down Waz's sigh for a second? It's all good. We're all there. Harry's is hands down the best shave I've ever had. It's cheaper than anything in the stores, and it's a better shave. I don't have to go to Dwayne Reed and have some like dude like unlock some like Fort Knox nonsense for me and then pay some like astronomical amount of money for some friggin' thing that's like packaged like it's like a jet, like a friggin' like Navy aircraft fighter, you know, carrier. It's ridiculous.
And containing blades that are like 75% as sharp as Harry's.
Exactly. So Harry's is smoother, better, cheaper, and more convenient. It's better by all possible metrics. Harry's 5-blade razors now include a softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide, a trimmer blade for hard-to-reach places, a lubricating strip, textured handle for more control when it's wet. Still just $2 a blade compared to $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. By owning a factory in Germany where they make the blades, Harry's can produce high-quality razors themselves and sell them online for half the price. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they'll send you their popular free trial set, which comes with a razor 5-blade cartridge and shaving gel. free when you sign up for a shave plan. Just pay shipping. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of this show. Enter promo code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout and get a post-shave balm added to your order for free. A post-shave balm. Go to harrys.com, enter code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout for a free trial set and post-shave balm. That's harrys.com, code MAJORITYREPORT. Okay, let's get to the first piece of sound. So, in some ways, and obviously you can take my man back up for this, in some ways we know that the only thing standing in between, it's going to be terrible, but we need to basically have psyops done on one of the most dumb, narcissistic people on the planet. And, of course, I'm talking about Mr. Trump, which is as respectful as I can get. And we saw this psyops in action when Donald Trump had his first meeting with President Obama. And, of course, you could tell that, first of all, you know, I don't think Trump is big on the personal confrontation front. And then he met Obama and he walked in and he was like, hey. And Obama was just like, hey, remember that store out in Pennsylvania? Yeah, I remember campaigning up there. You did a great job. Amazing campaign. And then Trump went, oh, my God, he's a great guy. Amazing guy. And then they sat down, and then Obama was like, also, you're going to need to appoint people to the Department of Interior. You mean like there's like a whole government department that interiorly decorates homes? I don't think that's very efficient. No, like parks and stuff like that. Oh, where my stupid fans go for vacations to boil up burgers or whatever else, other disgusting things they do. Okay. So basically, Obama charmed him by being gracious and probably literally the most patient human being on planet Earth. Yes. And Trump, as we recall, in that meeting, he said, and the end of the press conference, spontaneously said, he's a very good man. And by the way, I don't care that he was born in Kenya. Great guy.
Great guy.
Great guy. So now here he is talking to Leslie Stahl in 60 Minutes. Talking about Barack Obama, and then we're going to get to some news about the Obama-Trump relationship after we listen to this sound.
Can we talk about yesterday? Yes. With President Obama?
Sure.
90 minutes. You were scheduled for what, 15?
15 max.
We talked about foreign policy. We talked about domestic policy.
This was going to be just a quick little chat, and it lasted close to an hour and a half. And it could have gone on for 4 hours. It was almost hard breaking it up because we had so many things to say. And he told me the good things and the bad things. I mean, there are things that are tough right now. And
like what? Give us some meat.
Look, I don't want to divulge, but we talked about the Middle East. That's tough. It's a tough situation. I wanted to get his full view. And I got his full, you know, I got a good part of his view. Mm-hmm. And I like having that because I'm going to be inheriting that in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. I found him to be terrific. I found him to be very smart and very nice, great sense of humor, as much as you can have a sense of humor talking about tough subjects, but we were talking about some pretty tough subjects. And we were talking about some victories also, you know, some things that he feels very good about. But,
like,
what I really wanted to focus on was Middle East, North Korea. Obamacare is tough. You know, health care is a tough situation right now.
I bet he asked you not to undo it.
He didn't ask me, no. He told me, you know, the merits and the difficulties, and we understand that.
You looked pretty sober sitting there in the Oval Office.
Wow. Pause it. You look terrified. Go back.
Sitting there in the Oval Office. Did something wash over you? Or?
No, I think I'm a sober person. I think the press tries to make you into something a little bit different. In my case, a little bit of a wild man. I'm not. I'm actually not. I'm a very sober person. But it was respect for the office. It was respect for the president. Again, I'd never met him before, but we had a very good chemistry going, and I really found it might not be that I agree with him, but I really found the conversation unbelievably interesting.
I want to emphasize to you, Ms. President-elect, that we now are going to want to do everything we can to help you succeed, because if you succeed, then the country succeeds.
Was it at all awkward at all, given what you said about each other? You said he was not born in this country. He said things about you. He said
it was unqualified. It was a very interesting thing, because a few people have asked me from my family, what was that first period of time like?
Yeah.
We never discussed what we said about each other. I said terrible things about him. He said terrible things about me. We never, ever discussed what we said about each other.
There was no awkwardness.
I'll be honest. From my standpoint, zero.
All right. I can't take this anymore. All right. It's hysterical, and also I'm getting nauseous again. And then as a result of this, and this is also in concert with this, and I'm going to get your thoughts on this in a second, Waz. Another thing that happened in this meeting, besides the great chemistry and talking about very difficult things and interesting things, but also difficult things. And I mean, he's cool like a black guy, but he's smart like an Asian guy, and he's funny like a Jew guy. It's weird. I mean, this guy's amazing. I've never seen anything like it. The other thing that happened was that Donald Trump, and now I'm quoting from the Wall Street Journal, during a private White House meeting on Thursday, Mr. Obama walked his successor through the duties of running the country. And Mr. Trump seemed surprised by the scope, said people familiar with the meeting. Trump's aides were described by those people as unaware that the entire presidential staff working in the West Wing had to be replaced at the end of Mr. Obama's term. After the meeting with Mr. Trump, the only person to be elected president without having held a government or military position, Mr. Obama realized the Republican needs more guidance, and he plans to spend more time with his successor than presidents typically do, people familiar with the matter said. So basically, it could be a children's book where patient Barack teaches Donald. But I honestly think this is the best hope we have. It's like you can always tell who he's just been with, right? Like, we need to deport all of them because he's just had a cross burning with Bannon. We're like, by the way, you know what? Black people got a really raw deal. Just had a meeting with Obama.
Right. Yeah, you know what's funny? When I hear Donald Trump seem surprised at the breadth and scope of the job of the office, I think if you pose the same question to his supporters, they'd be just as surprised.
Right. Right. I agree.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you actually have an appreciation and understanding for what it takes to do this damn job, I don't see how you could vote for Donald Trump.
Well, you know what? The last...
He's never staffed a political apparatus. He's never been a governor. He's never run for anything. He's never had to do these... perform these tasks before. So, of course, he's like, wow, wait, I got to bring in new people to do all of this?
Hold on.
What?
That's complicated.
I don't just get to show up?
Yeah, I like just showing up. I like ranting about my enemies and occasionally making fun of a kid in a wheelchair and then calling it a day. During the Trump era, if you indulge in steaks, which maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't, they will not be Trump steaks, at least if you're talking about me.
Drats.
And that's why... if you're looking for the perfect gift, let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99 you can get my family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code MAJORITY in the search bar. That's 77% off. Omaha Steaks offers unique gifts for gourmet food lovers. Great steak experiences at home. The most powerful tender aged beef plus seafood, poultry, pork, veal, lamb, veggies, desserts, appetizers, pastas, soup, seasoning, sauces, and so much more. Why Omaha Steaks? With over 500 gourmet gift ideas, the highest quality cuts and ingredients, one-of-a-kind flavor, and a convenient and quick shopping for those on your list. Age for 21 days to unlock the full flavor of the cuts, hand-trimmed, vacuum-sealed, online recipes, wine pairing, and so much more. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving exclusive savings just to Majority Report listeners. Listen to everything that you will get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two sirloin steaks, two sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four pork all beef meatballs. Excuse me, four all beef meatballs, four potato gratin.
Au gratin.
Thank you, Waz. Finally, a little bit of sophistication in this office. Four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha steak seasoning packet, plus get four additional kielbasa sausages for free. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code report in the search bar, add the family gift pack to your cart and get 77% savings. It's a gift guaranteed to hit. That's enter. It's omahasteaks.com. Enter code. Enter report in the search bar. All right. So we have this disaster on our hands, and I mean, we're laughing at it because what else are you going to do?
You could cry, like some people did.
You could cry. I think crying is valid. Let's start, because we got to get to the Democratic house cleaning and the lessons to learn from this race. But let's, and also some of the points of resistance. But let's start by just reviewing the appointments of Steve Bannon and Reince Priebus. So basically, Donald Trump has announced that he is going to staff up. His chief of staff is going to be Reince Priebus, which, you know, terrifyingly in this environment, that's just like...
That's a breath of fresh air.
Corporate shill Republican, not a known white supremacist. And he will probably,
sorry,
like I'm just...
I don't know why that, the fact that, that's a strike in his favor.
I was talking with Ben Mankiewicz the other day, and I was saying, like, best case scenario, like, Kellyanne babysits him, and Mike Pence makes sure that there isn't an enemies list. Like, this is, like, literally where we're going. So, Reince Priebus, chief of staff, he's going to get, the payoff for being a loyal soldier, and we made fun of him for it, but it's worked in his favor, okay? So he's a, ultra corporate hack, far-right, Milwaukee suburban lawyer operative. And then Steve Bannon as chief strategist. And Steve Bannon, we know, is the proprietor of Breitbart. He's the publisher. He's the guy who, called Bill Kristol a renegade Jew. He published articles like Birth Control Makes Women, I Think It's Crazy and Ugly. And he's been an unabashed outlet of white nationalism, misogyny, and racism. And that's his chief strategist. So basically we'll have a situation where Reince is going to be like, Steve, I told you to do cross burnings in the back of the White House. Can't have a goddamn photo op. What the Christ? Trying to hand resources off to the freaking Koch brothers here, and you're creating all sorts of distractions with the freaking Klan revival. So basically that's what we got. And I mean, and this shows that, like with any other constituency, look, actually, you know what? Let's back it up and get to the core of it. So it's horrifying and disgusting in and of itself. But, and I think people have pointed this out, Barack Obama was dragged through the coals for going to a liberal black church where a minister amidst, actually calling for social tolerance. One of the reasons that Obama picked that church, as far as I understand, was because he had a much more – Reverend Wright was much more tolerant of gay people. Reverend Wright was proactive on AIDS and proactive on the drug war. He gave some firebrand speeches on white supremacy, not white people as people, but structural racism, and connected it to our foreign policy, which is not in any way illegitimate. That was national crisis. And now we have a straight-up – bigot as chief strategist of the White House. Should that be a reminder of the reality of where we're at?
Of course.
I mean, even just beyond Trump.
Of course.
The compare and contrast of those.
I mean, you already see it. Steve Bannon has already been put in, once Bannon was announced, you saw some reporters showing some of the Breitbart headlines. And it's like, you show four of those headlines, it doesn't really give you the breadth of the situation, right? It's like, no, this is every single day.
Right.
The most poisonous rhetoric probably on the right anywhere that isn't an actual neo-Nazi website.
Right.
And this guy is going to be in charge of staffing and hiring. And, you know, when you look up Breitbart's comments on what he ideally would like to see for the country, which is it burning down all the institutions, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. it's a problem.
And doesn't this also, though, like, you know, I remember when Andrew Breitbart died, and it was before, like, I was just out of college. I wasn't doing any of this stuff professionally, but I unfortunately knew who he was. And I just remember, like, you know, it was treated like, and we're not talking about Bannon, obviously. We're talking about Andrew Breitbart, who died in 2012, I think. And it was, like, treated like, you know, oh, this guy was, like, a provocateur. And, you know, wasn't Andrew Breitbart, so he was so edgy. You know, every person, the only person that I knew who wrote, like, a straight up, like, F this guy was Mark Ames. Everybody else wrote, like, either things that are completely irrelevant, like, yes, he leaves a family behind, that's sad. There's a million people who have left families behind whose names we don't know, who have never, you know, engendered toxicity in the public, who've passed away. And I think that, you know, I guess my point is that it seems to me, and this is a lesson that we need to learn from this, that, like, in some ways liberalism got to a point where we took things that are problematic but relatively trivial way too seriously, and the real depth of how deep this hatred and white supremacy goes not nearly seriously enough.
Yeah, I'm conflicted with that, because a lot of times when you watch a show, you know, which I don't watch anymore, but you watch something like Bill Maher, right?
Right.
He would have Breitbart on.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him
on. He would have Coulter on. But at the same time, if you don't have him on, I feel like people don't have an appreciation for the type of shit that people that aren't in the social circles of somebody like you or I,
right,
the type of media that they consume. Like, Breitbart is a big operation, which means that a lot of people are consuming and internalizing the stuff that they put out there. So if you don't put them on TV and it's like, look, this guy has a following. There are Americans who agree with everything that's on this man's website. Sometimes I feel like it's important to actually give people an idea of what else is out there. Because if I only hang out with people like Mike and, I guess, Matt.
To an extent.
To
a very limited extent.
Yeah,
you'll find out.
We're going to get into Matt's Trump victory parade. But
yeah, there's a little.
Not right
if
now.
If you listen to Two Dope Boys, you'll understand a little bit more of the disturbing nature of what's really going on.
And, you know, and they're giving voice to a lot of this stuff in the media, too, where they talk about our left-wing bubble, which, again, I feel like I'm being patronized because there's another bubble.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You understand?
Right. Yeah.
We don't even bother.
The bubble where climate change is an NWO conspiracy?
Of course.
But I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not saying don't hear those people, but I'm saying when Andrew Breitbart was treated like he was on Bill Maher, and it was like, yeah, it wasn't like, we'll hear you and we'll even could be, you know, you could do a panel with somebody and be personally cordial, but like, dude, you're disgusting. Like, what you're trying to do is fundamentally disgusting, right? And to me, I look back at Andrew Breitbart and that attitude, and it was almost like pre-normalization.
Yeah.
Because right now it's like we really truly cannot normalize this in any way, shape, or form. And I think that that's, you know, that's how those things ran off the rails. Which, here you go. Okay, so we have some sound actually to get to this. This is Jeffrey Lord, who I would say is another softcore white nationalist, talking with Chris Cuomo on CNN about Donald Trump naming a white nationalist bigot as his chief strategist. Let's take a look. Take a listen.
You likened Steve Bannon to James Baker. Poor James Baker.
No, Chris, I likened Reince Priebus James Baker.
All right, that's good. Then I'm fine with that. Let's leave it alone. How do you feel about Bannon?
I think he's been smeared, to be perfectly candid. I read Breitbart every day. On diversity politics. And diversity politics, from my point of view, as you know, is absolute racism. The culture of racism at the core of the Democratic Party for 200 years and the American left has been normalized, to use the word you were using a few minutes ago, that it's okay to divide people by race. It isn't. That's what the American left does. Bannon is opposed. Good for him.
except in what you just said. And by the way, look, the way you just said it is fine. People will agree, they'll disagree. But what Breitbart does, whether they're targeting me or they're targeting other people in the media, is they deceive, they distort context, and they do it to advance an agenda that the media is against you, and that everything is the left, and that the system is the left, and that this is about a race war and about white America being put down. And now you have that guy in the White House speaking for all Americans. Is that good?
Chris, I mean, I just disagree totally with your picture of Steve Bannon. I mean, I read Breitbart every day. I mean, it's conservative. I mean, you're not going to hear much difference out of Breitbart than you are from Rush Limbaugh.
That's exactly right.
That's a beautiful point.
Exactly. Take it up.
That's.
No, I mean, how much more is in this clip? Yeah, Waz, go ahead. Take it up.
That's what I was saying last time I was here. If you don't consume conservative media, you don't understand how people get to thinking this way. If you're somebody who lives in the other bubble, you know, the one where science is fake, the one where our president was born in a foreign country.
Right.
If you don't know how pervasive this line of thinking is. And so what Lord just said is completely right. He's like, Breitbart's no different than Rush Limbaugh. And if you carry that a little bit further, Donald Trump's rhetoric is no different from both of those two. Whether it be Absolutely. Breitbart or Limbaugh or whatever the case may be on the far right, what we used to call in the mainstream the fringe, which we've learned is a lie. That's the mainstream of the GOP is Breitbart, Limbaugh. So he's fringe, actually said some truth there.
The fringe chief strategist.
Fringe, I mean, yeah, the fringe. Totally he's fringe.
The right, these people would go on TV or mainstream media outlets, and whenever the Breitbart wing, the Rush Limbaughites would get brought up, they would say, yeah, but that's just the fringe. You know, the rank and file Republican doesn't think like that.
No, it's actually, and this is the bigger stuff we need to get. But I just want to make one really quick point here, because as I say, like, I think in some ways, like, it's part of, like, I would call it, like, the pseudo-woke neoliberal left got obsessed with, like, you know, it's like Brad in accounting didn't always use the proper, you know, gender terms, and that's the end of the world. And I'm not saying that it isn't a problem, but it's like, okay, on one hand, there was this, like, obsessive focus on relatively small but important things, but still relatively small things, while at the same time, I think some people in some ways even underestimated. I think anybody who was pretty confident that just even demographically alone, or that even as racist and as sexist and as, you know, sort of sick as this country is in so many ways, that we had moved past a certain level of just rank, right? And we haven't. And I think that people need to actually get a lot more serious about these things. Like, it is not just in these, like, conversations where people know what the word intersectional means and all
right,
of this. Not,
yeah.
I mean, when you talk about that bubble. So I think that we've had this conversation that has been very elite and very inwardly directed, and it's been, you know, profoundly disconnected from both the rest of the country in different ways. I mean, and I want to get into some of the numbers here and this kind of, like, yeah, but go ahead before I transition.
Yeah, but before you transition, what I would like to say is that I think it's two things. There's one, there's this line of thinking that, well, these people must agree with Breitbart, Donald Trump, and, you know, the Limbaugh types. It's like, sure, but they don't go through their lives actually speaking that way to people.
Totally.
Or behaving that way. But their capacity to stomach it is a lot bigger than... And even I, as a complete cynic about racism, because we got to stop using race relations, by the way, because it's a one-way street.
I mean, okay? Look, I mean, frankly, I enjoy race relations.
You know what I'm saying?
It's true.
It's a one-way street. Racism, yeah. People's right. Capacity to be able to stomach racism is a lot higher than, you know, even somebody like me would have thought. It's not that everybody walks outside and they want to punch blacks and Mexicans in the face just at their sight, at the sight of them. No. But their stomach for the people who do,
that's right.
is a lot higher than we originally thought.
And they stomach it because there's like a sort of natural appetite for people to sort of pathologically want to balance the equation. So we're talking about Jeremiah Wright earlier.
Yes.
So all they can say about this Bannon stuff, I bet you go on, if you search Twitter for Jeremiah Wright now, it'd be all over there because people are like, well, what about Obama did this? And that's all you need. And then you skate past
it. Yeah. And the fundamental, and this is where, you know, the lack of understanding how power works in this country is the other fundamental problem because people just don't do asymmetries in this country, and you can't have a conversation on fairness until you're in a somewhat fair context. But look, I think that that's a perfect way of putting it, that if we look at this base of people that voted for Trump, it's going to run the gambit from absolutely an emboldened, racist, bigoted, misogynist, white supremacist, wing that's represented by Steve Bannon. It's represented by the Klan, celebrating. That's absolutely clear. At the same time, I think it's very, very important, and this goes to this conversation on the real radical cleanup that we need in the Democratic Party, that the recognition that white supremacy is at the – I mean, look, just look at the reality of this country, right? It was founded on settler colonialism, genocide, free labor from slaves, and then we had an apartheid system through the 60s, which was then only legally dismantled. So that's just reality. That's not like a polemic. That's just like if you know what you're remotely talking about, that's the water we swim in. That's the context we're in. Okay, so we have that. At the same time, Barack Obama got more white votes than Hillary Clinton. Why? Undoubtedly, I think if we looked at, Charlie Pierce found, there's some kind of anecdotal evidence of some people that are like in the Alex Jones zone of so far out of having any type of sort of relationship to empirical reality that that's hard to approach. Then there's the expression of
some thoughts on that.
Well, we'll get back to that. I just want to set these three categories up. Then there's the, and this was shown in the fact that, look, white people, and it wasn't just poor working class white people. The median Trump voter's income, I think, is $72,000. It's not income.
Economic anxiety,
it's,
man.
No, that's there too, but in a different way than it's being presented. But the big other message was like, look, we have said, and if you've listened to someone like Sam for years, way before any of us, again, were even doing this, anybody that was being honest about Republican Party said Republican Party is the party of white identity politics.
Of course. Period.
And no one wanted to be – that's unfair and da-da-da-da-da. This is what it is. That's why Republican woman voters didn't flip the way it was speculated they would, the way the Clinton campaign built that stupid campaign strategy on.
Ugh.
The way, all the rest of it, because it is about and then you had someone who spoke unabashedly to that and it won. Now, the third thing is, and there is a Jad Kolko report on this in Nate Silver's website. The Trump vote was stronger where the economy is weaker. And I'm just going to read a couple of quotes from this. Last month, leading up to Tuesday's vote, experts debated how much Trump support was driven by economic anxiety or by racism, xenophobia, or other factors. The reasons are not mutually exclusive. I don't know how many times that can be underlined. In fact, it's vitally important that we recognize they're not mutually exclusive because we have to fight all of the right battles simultaneously. And on the debate will continue long into Trump's presidency, but county level voting results suggest that economic issues underpinned at least some of Trump's support. And he goes basically into just a few more sort of numbers that I'll read. Actual election results saw no correlation between county's September 2016 unemployment rates and the level of support for Trump. Places with higher unemployment rates are no more likely to vote for Trump than those with lower rates. That feeds that this is about white identity and bigotry, no doubt. Unemployment, however, this is skipping ahead, is a crude measure of local economy. The government's official definition of unemployment ignores people who've stopped looking for work and have moved away altogether, and it doesn't distinguish between a full-time job at a factory and a part-time job at a fast food restaurant.
Right.
Measures that do account for these factors generally suggest a stronger relationship between economy and Trump's support. Counties with weaker job growth since 2012, for example, were more likely to support Trump. Moving ahead to my last quote. Economic anxiety about the future is not just the economic anxiety is about the future, not just the present. Trump beat Clinton in counties where jobs are at risk because of technology or globalization, particularly counties with the most quote unquote routine jobs, those in manufacturing, sales, and clerical works. Related occupations that are easy to automate or send offshore were more likely to vote for Trump. So there's raw disinformation, racism, white nationalism, and bigotry, which we were profoundly stupid to take our eyes off the ball on, and a serious economic anxiety of which neoliberalism has nothing least message-wise to say. And even to the extent to which Hillary has moved to the left, and that was fine and that was nice, the reality is that the modern Democratic project has offered very little to nothing for these people. And actually, in fact, I hear people today talking in my neighborhoods, in my bubble, like, we just need – because the message was so simple and so stupid. We need a simple and stupid message for those stupid people.
No.
Yeah. So anyways, break down those three kind of variables.
In particular, when it comes to these Obama people who flipped Trump,
yeah,
you know, I thought about it and I was like, well, if you put Barack, you put Trump, you put Romney and McCain and Hillary in a box, three of those things are like the other, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I kind of poo-pooed that idea of the outsider, but Barack in 2008 was pretty much an outsider. He wasn't in Washington for that long.
And the brand was outsider, for
right?
Sure.
And Trump obviously has never been anywhere near the government before. So, you know, he's I guess the biggest. And I guess I poo pooed that because it's just like, come on,
yeah.
What are we talking about here?
Right.
And as you said about the neoliberal message that they're selling to voters. It's just not going to work if you're not also backing it with the other carrot, which is white supremacy, systemic racism, and things like that. If you don't have either one of those, at least Trump is offering them one something that they can go home and hug at night.
Well, that's why this is global, because right. this is the story of our time. Where do we see Brexit? The far right is rising and winning elections across Europe because again, none of this stuff is as simple as we want it to be. But if the basic lesson is that left parties have turned into Davos meritocratic parties, right, that have a good and important message on social inclusion but have nothing to say about monopolies, are no problem with corporations, yeah, no modern Democratic president has done anything really serious on inequality, then – what else do you have? What? And then in the Republican Party, finally, we can dispel the fantasy that, like, oh yeah, there's normal Republican voters that really have no problem with Mexican or gay people, but they're just so worried about giving the Koch brothers tax cuts. So both elites and both parties, their delusions and fantasies have been shook. And unfortunately, they weren't shook by a noble old Jewish socialist. Right. They were shook by a clown fascist.
I just feel like we'd be remiss not to talk about this.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton is the – even if she tried to deliver an economic populist message, she's the wrong vessel for that message.
Of course.
But golly, Donald Trump. He's even richer than she is, right?
Oh,
and he was actually born rich. You understand?
Yes.
Like this idea that it's just hard. And you know, liberals and Democrats, they have a harder time delivering the message because, you know, they don't have the white nationalist, you know, trick up their sleeve to pull. But at the same time, you know, I was having a little Facebook war, which is like, I promised myself that's the last one I'm going to do this year. But it was on Friday, I think. And I was talking to people and I was like, look, working class blacks and Hispanics and Asians, they didn't vote Republican. It's not because they're shiftless and lazy and, you know, aren't upwardly mobile people. It's because the message of the Republican Party is that of, we don't want you.
Right.
And if we're made to be seen reaching out to you, we will lose our base support. So it's not – so this minorities that vote Democratic, it's not because they have some party loyalty or just – they just love Democrats. It's the only people that have offered them anything. So, you know, the job of the Democratic Party as far as providing a message of economic populism while also not being basically inclusive in that. It's a hard thing to pull off.
I mean, I don't know, because the reality to me is like, look, I think that, you know, for all of – and I had this conversation. I'd go back and listen to a Bill Fletcher Jr. where we compared and contrasted Jesse Jackson and Bernie Sanders in terms of pulling off basically an economic pulse – you know, an economic populist multicultural campaign. And like Jesse Jackson, you know, improbably and shockingly – because it's, you know, 1988 and he's a civil rights leader, arguably did, you know, an even better job than Bernie Sanders. And partially that's just because Jesse Jackson is an incredibly talented politician and a highly emotionally intelligent guy. But by the end of Bernie's campaign, that message was pretty synchronized.
Yeah.
That message was pretty there. And anybody, I mean, these are the two tracks that I want, and we'll play this Obama ad in a second that at least style-wise represents what we're talking about. Anybody on either side of the equation that just wants to get out and cover for the Clinton campaign and trash and say it's all cultural issues and it's all – look, and here's the thing. If you're right, then that's terrifying, because if you're right, then all you can do is pray that the demographics will eventually work, and there's nothing else to do. You happen to be wrong. And then on the other hand, absolutely, if you're out just saying, you know what, we told you, you just needed economic populism, and these you know, poor, noble, working people voted for Trump because
salt
they didn't
the
get
earth.
Salt
That's
of
my,
the earth. It's garbage. Those arguments are both garbage, and there's no doubt that you can simultaneously say – there's people that voted for Donald Trump that need to be appealed to through economics. They need to be reasoned with. But absolutely, if you voted for Donald Trump, at a bare minimum, you had an exercise in the most gentle way racial obliviousness, if not outright endorsement of white supremacy. There's no contradiction between those two points. This is Obama hitting Romney. And again, it wasn't really matched by policy, but the personality – and this is my last point in this rant. Bill Clinton and Barack Obama have won presidential elections because they're charismatic leaders. And the Democrats have collapsed as an institution in every other way. They lose state houses. They lose governorships. They can't keep Congress. They can't deliver on major issues. And then they have these guys that it's like, okay, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, they're rock stars. And that's a substitute for actually building a party. And then you're going to break out someone with all the same liabilities who's not remotely a rock star. It's going to be a problem. But let's watch this Obama and Romney ad.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
The Chinese are smiling all the way to the bank, taking our jobs and taking a lot of our future. And I'm not willing to let that happen.
He made a fortune letting it happen. Published documents show Mitt Romney's firms were pioneers at helping companies outsource their manufacturing to countries including China.
China.
Bragging they were a one-stop shop for their outsource requirements. Mitt Romney's not the solution. He's the problem.
By the way, not only is that an amazing ad, Mitt Romney sounds like Donald Trump on China.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and again, if Hillary couldn't effectively make that message because she's in the tank for the financial industry interests, so it's like and people know that too, and that's the thing that kind of it undercut her entire operation. It's one, there's this air of corruption around her, which.
And a lot of it is fantasy, and a lot of it is
misogyny,
and a lot of it is the vast right wing conspiracy worked.
Right, a lot of it is
That's also true.
It is conspiracy, and again, and you know, this is where I don't want to bail out the Obama coalition. This is where I don't want to bail out fellow liberals. This is where I don't want to bail out Republican voters, because if you say corruption is at the core of, you know, your vote and how you want to decide to make that, you can't then vote for Donald Trump. And what I was saying also this weekend is like, well, people weren't inspired to come out for her. I'm like, okay, this isn't a situation where
you're not going on a date.
One, this isn't
you don't need
a
to
date.
Be inspired to vote. I mean,
yeah, that's where I want to slap every lefty in the face. Who's like, well, you know, the DNC
people weren't fired up bad, so we get cloud fascism.
It's not like if both of them don't reach some voter threshold that the office just remains vacant.
We didn't go out to vote against Hitler because we were just totally uninspired, you know,
right?
Just
by his opponents. I mean, what are you talking about?
Just totally mediocre leadership.
But yeah, but Obama could effectively make that message.
Obama
could
effectively make that message, but they've outsourced it to people that happen to, as individuals like Barack Obama, who, regardless of what you think of his policies, possess extraordinary political talent and leadership.
But how many Democrats actually could have effectively made the message? You know,
well, Bernie certainly could have, and I think
maybe a guy like Sherrod Brown.
Maybe I think honestly, if he was, I think Joe Biden, if he was the candidate, we would be joking about how many states he won right now.
Right,
and another one.
And that's a guy who's like loves the banks. So.
Yeah, I think that's actually
no substance with Biden. He was the credit card senator.
I think that's actually, if you want to make a misogyny point, make those things. I mean, I think Biden is a better politician, and I think he's been in the sights less of
the crosshairs.
But look, but we got to get to the fun half in a second. But I do have to say, because we do need to talk about cleaning up the Democratic Party. Mm. But I just look. I'm sorry. I felt bad for Hillary Clinton when it happened, because whatever else you think of her, I think unless you have, you know, completely convinced yourself that she's one of the greatest criminal masterminds in human history or whatever. Like, people have, there is a very big distinction between not liking Hillary Clinton because of her policy sets and problematic intellectual framework and convincing yourself that she's some sort of unparalleled evil. That's bizarre, and I'll never indulge in that. So when she lost and still won the popular vote, and realized that instead of being the first woman president, she was just had lost to a, you know, buffoonish sexual predator. I felt for her, no doubt. Yeah. I felt for her personally. Now, that said, the Clintons and everyone in that crew, they need to go away, because they failed by their own metric. That was the thing with the Clintons. You can hate us, and you can disagree about all these awful policies in Haiti, and you can disagree with invasion of Iraq, and you can go back and look at how Bill's record was awful on Wall Street, poverty, crime, trade, everything. But you can't argue with the fact that we win. Well, no, you don't. And now, as if, like, I think this is almost like Alex Jones level fantasy life. It's been floated that Chelsea Clinton might run for Congress in New York, to which I sincerely, like, I would prefer you all just move to Dubai and set up some private bank accounts and just go. Just stop. You've done enough. You've done enough. Okay. At least Bill and Hillary were self-made.
Yeah.
And Hillary couldn't pull it off. And now we've got to do, like, second generation hedge fund. I worked for my parents. And look, Chelsea Clinton might be a perfectly intelligent, nice person. I don't really know anything about her. But the notion that the response to this is, well, we got to get some Wall Street fundraisers together to get Chelsea to represent a district in New York. Stop.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Yeah, and this election, if this election proves anything, it proves that on the merits, it kind of doesn't matter, right? It's about perception,
right?
Which is sad, and it's one of those terms that I hate. Perception is reality, but it's so freaking true.
But I mean, look, it's a fantastic point. I mean, I knew about it.
It's so true when you think about the Clintons in particular. You know, all of the cloud that has surrounded them basically since 1991, and it continues to persist until now. So this idea that the people at the DNC, the Democratic establishment, think that what this party needs going forward is more Clintons,
and that Donna Brazile hasn't resigned. I mean, look, like I'm not like. I don't want us to go
Debbie
this far.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz, my goodness.
Leave Congress. Like,
a disaster.
Can't there be just like a touch of Japanese cultural values in America? I don't want anybody like, you know, going on a sword. Let me be clear. But can there just be a touch of like, I just was so arrogant, incompetent, and fueled in like the bubble of the bubble of the bubble of the bubble. I ran a campaign that even though I had actually shifted and made some great policy pivots, which the Clinton team did on certain key issues, they still ran. They never campaigned in Wisconsin. They went and stopped running ads in swing states and then broke the bank to go in the second district in Nebraska because they were expecting a blowout. And then in the last week in Ohio, they're like, got no message on bringing factory jobs back, but ladies and gentlemen, Pharrell!
Yeah, it's
hubris.
And
they go out on Twitter, and none of them has resigned, and all they've got to talk about, some of them even want to go back to bashing Bernie. And if you are bashing Bernie for this,
yeah,
fuck you as a staff, record label.
And as a motherfucking crew.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah. And now we got to get to the fun half. We got a lot more to cover. We're going to talk more about cleaning house in the Democratic Party. We're going to talk about bringing Japanese values to America. And places of resistance. Some good news from Jerry Brown in California, Bill de Blasio in New York. The IMs are on. The phone call should be working. We'll see you all. Oh, and of course, become a member of the Majority Report today. I mean, it's not melodramatic to say this really is a profoundly important time to support intelligent, shrewd, independent media. Also an independent media that isn't just going to indulge in wild scenarios and whatever else, that is going to have a grounded response to a serious crisis we're in. And sometimes we get it wrong, obviously. Sometimes you can disagree with us, but we endeavor to do that every day. So please, if you can, become a member. Support us if you use Amazon through our Amazon link. Write us a review on iTunes. It helps. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Sam Cedar. All of our video content is up there, including some bonus content that I do and also some videos from Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. Subscribe to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. Actually, a lot of the conversations we have on Two Dope Boys around race, around the changing nature of America, have taken on a whole other level of urgency in this time, going from the Obama era to the Trump era. JustCoffee.coop, Fair Trade Tea Coffee, or Chocolate. Those are all the ways. You can follow us on Twitter @majority.fm, like us on Facebook, do all of that. We'll see you on the fun half.